ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Can you imagine the kind of letter you would write to your great-great-grandkids? 67 years ago, the ABC asked Australians to do just that, and...
Do you really live in a thing not much bigger than a couple of our phone boxes?
Perhaps you just press a button or twiddle a knob on some time machine and pop in to any point in time and space you feel inclined to visit.
Clearly they got a lot wrong. So why are we so bad at predicting the future? I'm Matt Bevan, and from If You're Listening, this is Black Swans, a series about the unpredictable moments that change the course of history.
The Canadian Prime Minister wants us to give up on the rules-based international order, which he bluntly says is fiction, and he's urged middle powers to unite. So, as Donald Trump continues to upend US foreign policy, what does Mark Carney mean, and where does Australia fit in? Today, Samir Puri, the author of Westlessness, The Great Global Rebalancing, on why, even when Trump is gone, the world will have changed forever. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Samir, since the speech by Mark Carney in Davos, there's been so much commentary about just how groundbreaking it was.
It seems that every day, we're reminded that we live in an era of great power rivalry, that the rules-based order is fading, that the strong can do what they can and the weak must suffer what they must. The middle powers must act together because if we're not at the table, we're on the menu.
Do you agree?
I think it depends on where in the world you're sitting. Mm. If you're British, if you're Australian, it is pretty spectacular that he, as they say, said the quiet part out loud by saying that by going along with the US, we were sort of living in a fictional world, almost like living in the Matrix.
This fiction was useful. And American hegemony in particular helped provide public goods, open sea lanes, a stable financial system, collective security, and support for frameworks for resolving disputes. This bargain no longer works.
But I think if you were a country that never liked the US, then I think it's a statement of the obvious. But I really think if you were really closely tied to the USA, it's really groundbreaking.
Let me be direct. We are in the midst of a rupture, not a transition.
All right, so Mark Carney, and he wasn't holding back, of course, he said that the US-led, rules-based international order is over, it's dead, and we should all basically stop pretending that the US is a reliable ally.
It's really astonishing, and the other passage that really struck for me was, we knew the story of the international rules-based order was partially false, and that the strongest would exempt themselves when convenient, and that trade rules were enforced asymmetrically. Mm. And it's obviously born from Carney and Canada's, you know, hurt emotions, deep frustration, but also the need to move themselves forward after, you remember a year ago, Trump threatened to turn Canada into the 51st state. This was under Trudeau. Yes. It's a reflection of all of that coming out in one go, but Carney has captured the world's attention by delivering that statement at Davos.
Yeah, he sure did. He also argues that great powers like the US are using economic tools, like tariffs, of course, to gain power.
It's a clear complaint that the way Trump is doing it now is flagrant and, frankly, predatory. And I think there are so many examples from around the world where it's, listen, it's my way or it's tariffs. And that's what he's saying to allies. It's what he's saying to rivals and adversaries. And obviously, it's grating, but it's really quite astonishing because the US always played its economic advantage cards a little bit more gracefully, but it played them nonetheless. So I think there's a change in tone, and there's, of course, a change in the drama of suddenly having tariffs imposed upon your country for even the minor misdemeanor that some countries feel that they've conducted in Trump's eyes.
All right. Well, Carney argues, of course, that simply continuing to comply with these international rules that, of course, have been in place since the end of the Cold War is no longer feasible. And he says, and this is, I guess, where Australia in part comes in, that like-minded middle powers must come together. Just explain, though, what does he actually mean by that, Samir?
So what he is, I think, in the first instance referring to is what you could call the rest of the West. Mm. So you take the US out of the Western equation, that leaves countries like Australia, Britain, the rest of the EU, but also within the G7, a country like Japan. Mm. And it's really about those countries starting to rely upon each other much more so in the absence of a reliable, kind of, you know, predictable, trustworthy USA. And this term middle powers is a little bit fiddly. It's a bit of a bar of soap of a piece of terminology. You can never really grab it because it covers such a wide range of countries. Mm. Arguably, it just covers countries that aren't major superpowers like the US and China. Doesn't really cover Russia. Does it cover India? Well, barely. Mm. And it doesn't obviously at the other end of the spectrum include tiny countries, you know, a Luxembourg or a Timor-Leste. So then it sort of dumps everybody into this middle powers category, but it's kind of, you know, rest of the world that isn't so powerful to be able to make the weather around it and isn't so tiny that it's going to be ridden roughshod over. And I think it really speaks to countries like Australia, the UK, Japan, Indonesia and others that have got more to explore in their relationship with each other than perhaps kind of lazily defaulting to US leadership and US dependencies in the way that lots of countries became comfortable in doing.
Well, our Foreign Minister Penny Wong, she does seem pretty keen on this idea from Mark Carney, this middle power notion.
The United States remains our most important strategic partner, and we were very pleased at the very positive visit that the Prime Minister had with President Trump. But we recognise we have to do more than that. We have to work in our region and we have to work with other middle powers.
So now then, Samir, why don't we consider how this could work and what the Canadian president is already doing? He has already begun flexing Canada's muscle, if you like, hasn't he? Because he's done this really big trade deal with China. Just tell me about that and the significance of it.
Yeah, so Mark Carney's Davos speech came just a few days after he was in Beijing. And that was the latter visit, didn't really get as much coverage, but it was just so important for Canada. He delivered an amazing press conference in Beijing after meeting Xi Jinping, where he talked about the US being a less predictable partner, in fact, than China is now.
Yes, in terms of the way that our relationship has progressed in recent months with China, it is more predictable, and you see results coming from that.
And there were talks with the Chinese on increasing the number of electric vehicles that the Canadians would import from China. There's also talk about increasing people-to-people links in terms of having a shared vision for global stability, which is really astonishing that Canada's PM, Prime Minister, is going to Beijing and talking to the Chinese about them being a greater bastion of global stability than, of course, the Trump administration, which is, as I said, threatened to annex Canada, even if it's just an empty threat. In terms of what happens now, in terms of developing that relationship, I think all countries, especially Western countries that are engaging in deeper relations with China, and the UK is another one. Keir Starmer has just completed his own trip to Beijing with a big UK trade delegation. Yes, there's lots of trade. There are also lots of security implications. And no one is so naive as to say, let's just replace the USA with China. It's not that simple. And Carney also expressed that the relationship Canada still has with the US is actually much more multifaceted. The relationship with China is still more tentative and a bit narrower and focused on specific things. So there's no like for like here. And one last example on this is that switching to Europe, the European Union conducted what it called the mother of all trade deals with India. So I don't want people to think this is only about substituting the US with China.
But this is the Canadian Prime Minister, isn't it, signalling that Canada doesn't have to be dependent on the United States. It is like he's hedging his bets between the United States and China, and by the way, sending this message to the leaders of all these other so-called middle powers.
Yeah, but only to the Western middle powers. Uh-huh. Again, that's the key point, is the rest of the world's middle powers have always been hedging. So that's why the rest of the world will Marseille, speaking for the rest of the world here, but just in general, shrug its shoulders at Carney's speech and go, well, we've been doing this all the time anyway. Yes. Take Indonesia, for example. You know, big visit with Xi Jinping for Prabowo, Indonesia's leader. And then he'll have a phone call with Donald Trump as well. So that balance that a country like Indonesia is doing, India balances its relations with the US and the West, as well as with Russia in its case. So this kind of multi-alignment, as foreign policy wonks call it, is nothing new in the wider world. But I think for those very close partners of the US, it feels like a novel thing. And actually, arguably, they're playing catch up with the way the rest of the world has been running their foreign policies for quite a number of years now.
Yeah, well, Australia, of course, has already had very strong trade ties to China. The problem is, though, history has shown us that, in fact, China can be a very unreliable trading partner.
Yeah, and in that regard, it puts itself in the same category as the US.
Mm.
And it's just the unreliability comes in a different form. And the US unreliability still comes with cultural affinity, which obviously cushions it, because they're still, you know, the optimists who think, well, Trump will be gone or, you know, leave the scene in some form or another in a few years and kind of go back to the way it was. Well, I think the better question is, how much will the world have changed over the next few years as all these countries start to reshape and diversify their partnerships? You know, Carney's speech is putting words to actions that countries like Australia are already taking. Like you say, Australia has its relationship with China, has a great relationship with Japan. So it's that sort of mixing of relationships, and especially looking for greater solidarity, you know, with other bits of the G7. And that's why I mentioned Japan, because it's so important to Australia's backyard, its region.
There are some things that you think would be a good idea for these middle powers to come together and do, and you explain them as the three Ds. So tell me about that.
Yeah, especially for the European middle powers, and some of this does actually translate over to Australia as well. I mean, the first one is defence. I mean, just look at how many of these other Western countries, I say sort of culturally Western countries, geopolitically Western countries, have just been buying F-35 American fighters and Tomahawk American cruise missiles and everything else, kind of, you know, unthinkingly as well, just because that's what you do. You get this high-tech, off-the-shelf solution. Then it's about thinking, well, we actually are a bit exposed if we are so dependent on buying defense material from the US. Alongside that is Trump's belligerent threat on all the rest of his sort of allies to increase their defense spending. So that's defense. The second one is démarche, which is, you know, the French term of getting together and doing it, staging a diplomatic protest over something. I think Australia should be having a conversation, or at least a private conversation, as to what would it do if Trump actually renews his threats around annexing Greenland. And I don't think it directly affects Australia, but would the rest of the West actually get together and say, no, this is wrong? Because actually, you know, for all the concern about Russia and its war of conquest in Ukraine, for all of the concern around China and a possible annexation of Taiwan, you know, the extent that America becomes annexationist is extraordinarily worrying. So that's the point about démarche. The third point is dynamism.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is an enormous onus on countries like the UK, like Australia, like Japan, just to show that they're being dynamic, thinking afresh about a changing world. And it's about sort of waking up from a slumber. If you're a Briton or you're in Australia, where you're quite comfortable with this very US-dominated world, even if you had some complaints with it, to being sort of juddered awake by the fact Trump is so belligerent, so unpredictable, and that the US, and just rounding this point off, even when Trump leaves the scene, the US political culture and ideology seems to have shifted a sort of almost permanently in this different direction of the US being a very selfish country. So it's refashioned its global positioning in this very sort of selfish way.
Okay, well, Samir, overall, I suppose you think the middle power idea of Carney's isn't a bad one. But I guess really the question is, would it all be worth it? Because the United States, it is a superpower, and nations like the EU and Australia and others, we need its military support at the end of the day. And so really, should we just not stick with the status quo regardless of Trump?
Yeah, there's a lot of temptation, especially a country like Australia and other, you know, Britain again, there's the greatest temptation to stick with that inertia. But the fact is the status quo is actually over.
Uh-huh.
And I think the other point is you don't have to just trade off the US entirely. It's about the balance of dependency on the US. And that's the world that we're in now. So the ones who are arguing to maintain the status quo, I think, are going to be at risk of leaving their heads buried very, very firmly in the sand.
And even when Trump's gone, watch the international rules order, it's changed forever.
Yes, well, this is the bringing our conversation full circle. This was the key point of the Carney speech, is that it was always a fiction. Of course it was a fiction. And actually, it was always a way of making US global domination and leadership much more palatable. We don't know exactly what form or shape it will look like in the future, but the biggest, I think, and you know, most undeniable prediction is the world is going to be multipolar. And this is the novelty. Some of those sources of power and influence are not going to be Western. And we haven't had that. Listen, the last non-Western, serious non-Western empire was Imperial Japan, and that was extinguished 81 years ago. We have not had a world in which power and influence is shared, even if unequally, between a mixture of Western and non-Western powers. And that is the challenge for countries in the middle, Australia, for example, in terms of where it positions itself.
Samir Puri is the author of Westlessness, The Great Global Rebalancing. He has also just completed a year as director at Chatham House's Centre for Global Governance and Security in London. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Cinnamon Nippard. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily. We'll be back again on Monday. Thanks for listening.